So for the last days of Pesach, we're going to speak about what happened by Elzasher. In Parak Yudal, Pasuk Lamed, it says, Vayosha Hashem b'yom huwa tzom yam Mitzrayim. Hashem saved on that day B'nai Yisrael from the hands of the Egyptians. Vayyaras also Mitzrayim Yisrael Sasayam. And Yisrael saw the Mitzrayim dead on the banks of the river, on the banks of the sea. So the simplest way to understand this pasuk is from the Netziv. There were some Egyptians that survived Kriyas Yamsuf, either because they were able to swim out before it got really bad, or because they never went in the first place. And that's most likely. There were some Egyptians that never went in because they were like, this is crazy, why should we go inside? Whatever the reason was, there were some Egyptians who were still alive and could have chased after the Jews, but they were done. They went home completely dejected, knowing they'd lost everything. That's what it means when it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them on that day from the hands of the Egyptians. What does it mean, the hands of the Egyptians? The Egyptians were all dead. The answer is no. There were certain people that were still alive, and he saved them from the hands of those people who were still alive. The Malbim says another answer in Pshat. The decimation was so complete, everything that happened to the Egyptians, that even though they had just suffered through all the Makos, the Egyptians were still determined enough to get them back. But after this, after Kriyas Yamsuf, there was no thought about going after them anymore. And in fact, until the times of Shishak, 500 years later, the Egyptians stayed as far away from the Jews as they possibly could, even though they were still close neighbors. Notice throughout all of Tanakh, when you go through Yoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel Aleph, right, and Shmuel Beis, and all of Shmuel Beis, you do not see the name of Shishak once. You don't see any of the people of Paro. Egypt doesn't come into play. They fought against Moab, they fought against Ammon, they fought against the Pelishim, they fought against Edom, they fought against Amalek, they fought against the Canaanim, obviously, and all the other seven nations that are around there, Aram, and all the other people. But Mitzrayim is nowhere to be found. But Mitzrayim's right there. And Mitzrayim was still a superpower, although they did lose quite a bit during the Makos. They were still an unbelievable nation that the Nile River could turn back their economy in 1 year. This is a very strong, very, but they were so scared out of their minds of any Jew or anything Jewish. The fear lasted so many, many years. The line over here is Yisrael saved us from Mitzrayim for many, many years. That's Miyad Mitzrayim, and that's what it means by Miyad Mitzrayim. The Malbim says that. It's also mentioned by Rav Victor Miller in a few places. Ayelet HaShachar says that's what it means by Miyad Mitzrayim. Since the Jews were still afraid of the Egyptians, only after the Egyptians were dead and they were no longer afraid, they could have been said to have been saved from the hands of the Egyptians. Because now they felt it was completely different now that they saw their dead bodies and they couldn't feel free without it. That's what it means, they were saved from the hands of the Egyptians. So those are the three pshatim that you have of the idea of Miyad Mitzrayim in simple pshat. And it's even the Malbim and Ayel Sashachar. The imagery used by the Yalkut Shimoni to explain this Miyad Mitzrayim in 239 is that of Bnei Yisrael as a bird in the hands of an Egyptian man. The Egyptian man could easily close his hand around the little bird and crush it. Hashem saved them literally from the hands of the Egyptians, who were so close to crushing them completely, both physically and spiritually, right? That's what he was able to do. Hashem reached out to save us. And then the Medrash says, like a farmer sometimes has to reach in to help a cow birth a calf, to take the calf out of the womb of the cow, allowing a dangerous situation turn into a form of salvation of Yeshua. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did over here. The Shach says another reason why they had to be saved from the hands of the Egyptians is because their hand was all over the world. The Egyptians were a very powerful nation. We forget that. The Egyptians were in charge of the economy of basically the entire world. There was everything all around there. Since the Jews felt like they had nowhere else to go, there was nowhere else for them to be, but they felt that there was nothing for them to do, the Egyptians had to die. And the Jews had to see it in order for them to feel completely free. See, when a slave runs away from his master, as they did over here, as long as the master is still alive, there's always a fear. An irrational fear, but a fear that the master is going to chase after the slave and bring him back. So the slave lives in constant fear his entire life, and he can't deal with anything because he thinks he's always going to be brought back to his king, to his master. Only when they saw the Egyptians that died, that their masters had died, did they know they're free. They don't have to worry about anything. Everything's done. Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer says that they saw the Egyptians floating in the Yamsuf, clearly dead, being blown by the northern wind toward Machne Yisrael so they could see them and recognize them. It does not say that they went onto the shore. It does say they were blown by the northern wind. Seemingly, they went onto the shore itself. Now, I am going to point this out. I have no idea why the northern wind was involved over here. It doesn't make any sense at all. However you look at Kriyas Yamsuf, whether they went straight across the sea and they went from the west bank to the east bank of, well, technically, let's not even call it the Red Sea. It's not the Red Sea. The Red Sea is a little bit too far south for them to have crossed. What it would have been the Gulf of Suez, which is the two, if you take the Red Sea and then you go up, you have the Sinai Peninsula right in the middle. On both sides of the Sinai Peninsula, there is the Gulf of Aqaba on the right-hand side, which connects, you know, Sinai on one side and Saudi Arabia on the other side. And on the other side, between Egypt and Saudi and Sinai, it's the Sinai Peninsula, is the Gulf of Suez, which eventually led to the Suez Canal, etc., that connected the Mediterranean Sea to the Indian Ocean, which caused trade to prosper between those two areas. That Gulf of Suez is most likely what they crossed, unless it was some river that we're not sure of, like the River of Egypt or whatever, but it's most likely the Gulf of Suez. They went across the Gulf of Suez, right? They went from the west side to the east side. Even if they went in a semi-circle sort of directional type of area, like the Rambam says in Perikei, and Perikei Avos, and like the Tosus says in Arachin and Daf Tesvav, however they went, whether they went across, whatever, either way, the northern wind should not have been involved. Like, if they went from the west to the east, right, then you'd assume that the bodies would have been blown by the west wind to the east. If they went from the west to the another side of the west, in other words, from the southwest to the northwest, then you'd assume that it wasn't the northern wind, it was the southern wind that blew them, or the eastern wind that blew the bodies onto there. The northern wind should not have been there. Why he says the northern wind, I have absolutely no idea, unless you're referring to maybe they went on top of the whole thing, and the northern wind refers to the wind coming from the south toward the north, but that doesn't sound right. Either way, regardless, it seems there's something there, but that's what Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says. Ibn Ezra, Rashbam, Tur, and all the Baalei Tosafot seem to say the same exact thing in this. The Jews were standing on the banks of the sea, and they looked out at the sea, and saw all the Egyptians drowned before their very eyes. The Egyptians didn't go onto the banks of the sea. They didn't get spat onto the shores. There was no need for that. They saw them drown over there. So the way to read the pasuk is, Vayari Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael saw, Es Mitzrayim Mace, the Egyptian nation die, Al Sfasayim. The Jews were on the banks of the sea. Not that the Egyptians were on the banks of the sea, but that the Jews themselves were on the banks of the sea when they saw the Mitzrayim die. That's the way of understanding it. It's a really, really, really crazy idea, but the Ibn Ezra, Rashbam, Tur, and Baalei Tosafot all seem to say the exact same thing when it comes to that. In fact, the Tur himself says, and this is not like the Gemara. The Ibn Ezra has no problem with it. The Ibn Ezra goes against the Gemara quite a bit, but he says it's not like the Gemara itself. Chizkuni says, they did die drowning in the sea, but they were then brought onto the shore, as you would expect, because that's what the shore does. That's what the waves of the sea do. And the Jews saw them dead, spat up onto the shore, but they died in the sea itself, and then were spat onto the shore afterward. That's the Chizkuni. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, there's something wrong here, because if all of this is true, then why would it say that they saw them dead? If they drowned, which we already know that happened, wouldn't it be obvious that they were dead? It's got to be that they actually saw them die. And we're saying by Yari Yisrael's Mitzrayim Mace, Al Sfasayim, it means that they saw the Egyptians die on the bank of the sea, not in the sea, not drowning, but they saw them die on the banks of the sea itself. It must be that they were spat out onto the sea, the seashore, and that they still hadn't died yet. And that's the idea. That concept, says Or HaChaim HaKadosh, would be there. Now in Pesachim, Kuf Yud Ches Mabez, the Gemara actually says that. Hashem told the Sar Shel Yam to spit out the bodies onto the shore so the Jews would see them and know that they were going to die. Now, it doesn't say over there that they were going to die. It says that the Sar Shel Yam had to spit them onto the shore itself, which sounds more like the Chizkuni, more than anything else. But Rashi continues the thought. He says that all the Egyptians, seemingly while they were still alive, were spat onto the shore of the Yam Suf, so the Jews wouldn't think they survived, right, and going to the other side of the bank of the sea. Because obviously the Jews went on one side, maybe they were on the other side. They were Miktani Amunah until they saw that Hashem had done this, and they started to believe in them. Vayaminu ba'Hashem v'Moshe Avdo. That's the idea behind it. And Targum Yonason seems to say the same. But I think in the Parish Yonason, the Netziv, the Ksav HaKabbalah from the Mechilta, all say that the way to read Mace over here is not as dead, that they were dead. It's Mason velo Mason Mamish. They were dead, but not totally dead. They would begin to die in the sea. Their drowning was yet another bit of suffering as a part of the makos that they had. But they finally died on dry land itself. It's similar to Rachel, I mean, when she was dying, it says, Kitseis nafsha kimesa. As her soul was leaving her, because she was dying. She was not dead yet. She couldn't name a child if she was dead yet. That would be really difficult. She was dying. The word mace is used to the idea that for this idea. The Maral Diskin proves this in a few different ways. He says a bunch over here, but the Maral Diskin says it. So I don't know if this is actually pshat in Rashi or this is the diak that we're going to make in Rashi to make it so. I could see it in both ways. But the idea definitely is true, and I think that this is what the Gemara is trying to say as well. It's certainly what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh was being medayik over here, and everybody else as well. The Alkosh Shimoni 239 says that the Jews saw the Egyptians die right in front of them. This is based on the Mechilta, since it doesn't say the word mesim, that they had all died, but rather mace, that they died at that moment before the Jews' eyes. Now, the simple shot behind that is simply put, right, that Mitzrayim is the Egyptian nation. Mace is because we said Mitzrayim in the singular, the Egyptian nation, therefore, singular, he died. But the way that the Yalkut Shimoni is saying it is that since it doesn't say the word meisim, it says meis, it seems like they all died at that moment, all at once. And that's why it's meis in singular. They all died at that once. It could be, right, somewhere different, but I think this is the obvious and the idea behind it. This is for four different reasons why the Jews had to see them die. Number one, so the Jews wouldn't say, just like we were saved on this side of the Yam, perhaps they were saved on the other side of the Yam, and they'd be still scared of them, and they think they're still alive, as we just said from the Gemara Pesachim Kupiches. Number two, so the Egyptians would know that the Jews had survived when they had all perished. If they died in the sea, they would never know what happened to the Jews. Maybe they thought the Jews had all died as well. So they would have no problem with that whatsoever, but when they lived and came to the other side and saw the Jews had survived, then they knew that it was crazy. Number three, so they would be able to grab the tremendous riches the Egyptians had brought with them into battle to appease their god Baal Tzephon. They wanted to see, or they would be able to see the tremendous riches and take it for themselves. And number four, so the Jews would be able to see them, recognize them, give them a bit of Musar, and then watch them die. It seems that the Jews actually talked to them before they actually killed themselves. Panim Yafo suggests two reasons why they would have had to die only then and not in the sea itself. When people die by water, he says, their faces and other parts of the body swell and change. They would have been unrecognizable to the Jews, and they would not have known their masters were dead, and they wouldn't have taken the spoils from them that they deserved as their slaves. They would have said, oh, well, we shouldn't take this because they don't belong to us. They therefore were alive when they were spat out. All their features were recognizable. So they drowned, but they weren't drowned in the typical fashion, so their features remained the same, and only then did they die. The Maral Diskin says the same thing. I have a feeling that somebody put those two together. Another reason is because had they died, and this is halachically, their property and gold would have all belonged to their relatives, right? The relatives, their kids, their wives were still alive in Egypt. The property of orphans are not meshubed to a Baal Chov. So if somebody owes you money and then they die, the property goes to the orphans automatically, and it's not meshubed to you. Metaltim is not meshubed to a Baal Chov. Tfisa, it wouldn't work after they had already died. Tfisa wouldn't be able to work either, especially by a non-Jew. Therefore, says the Panim Yafo Safla, that they would have to grab all that were still alive, and then we would have the lacha, lov mafkina mine, the Jews would have been allowed to keep it. So that's exactly what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure they were still alive when they were spat onto the sea shores, when they went over there. They grabbed onto the money, and that's why they were able to keep it afterward. That's how Tfisa would work in that case. Medrash Tehillim Chav Beis says they sicked their dogs. This is the Jews. It seems like the Jews all own dogs. We talked about this earlier in the year on Parshas Shmos, but it seems like the Jews own dogs, and they sicked them on the Egyptians who were spat out in the sea, putting their legs on the necks of the Egyptians to be Mekayim the Pasuk of Ato Alba Masemo Sidroch. You will walk or trample over their mounds, over the evil mounds, and telling their dogs to eat the hands and the innards of these evil people who did terrible things to them in Mitzrayim. This seems to go with the opinion that the Egyptians were already dead, because seemingly it doesn't say that the dogs killed them, they just ate them, right? But that's what they allowed them to do. So first of all, you're allowed to have dogs, as we see from over here. Number two, this is an unreal idea of how the Jews were somewhat cruel to the Egyptians after they had died themselves. But again, you don't want to put yourself in the... I don't know what would have happened if the Jews that were in the ghettos found Nazis, Yimach Shemam, afterward and saw what they had died. You don't want to put yourself in this situation. Talmud Akra, Reb Chaim Kanievsky asks why the Egyptians deserved for this to happen to them. They drowned the Jewish babies. So therefore, Mida Kenegan Mida, they deserve to drown in the sea. That's Mida Kenegan Mida. They did this, so they deserve to have that back. But it doesn't seem like they pulled them out. And if so, why would they be punished to be spat out onto the shore and die there, being eaten by dogs or stabbed by the Jews? They didn't pull the... So it seems strange. If you want to say it's Mida Kenegan Mida, so the Mida Kenegan Mida is they drown babies, they should drown. But here, they didn't drown. They died on the shores and possibly eaten by dogs. Why in the world, or stabbed by the Jews, why in the world would that happen? So Reb Chaim Kanievsky answers that after they drowned the Jewish babies, they pulled them out to use them as bricks for their pyramids and buildings. And it's possible they even used their dogs to jump in and grab the bodies out onto the shore in order to use them. If so, I mean, imagery-wise, and unfortunately, my image is that I picture them holding the babies in the water until they had died, and then pulling them out and using them, right, Lo Aleinu, on as bricks. This is completely Mida Kenegan Mida. Hashem did the exact same thing to them. Pulled them out of the water after they had drowned, possibly dead, possibly not, to punish for what they had done, and then pulling them out and even using dogs to get that Mida Kenegan Mida. It's an amazing idea from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. I think that it works perfectly. He doesn't mention the dogs. I'm mentioning the dogs. But I think that's the idea of why they had to leave afterward. It just makes a ton of sense. Ksav Sofer also has an answer for the Mida Kenegan Mida, but I didn't fully get it. So I'm not going to mention the Ksav Sofer. The Chidah says that they had to wait until they actually saw the Egyptians dead before singing Shira. They had to see that they were dead before they sang Shira. That was the issue with the Malachim. The Malachim saw Kriyas Yamsuv and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu they wanted to sing Shira. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, Ma'aseh Yodai Tov Mayom, my handiwork is drowning in the sea and you want to sing Shira. You can't sing Shira while they're dying. That's the pshat. Ma'aseh Yodai Tov in Bayom. They're drowning right now. They're dying. The Nase is not finished yet. You can't sing Shira yet. You have to wait until the miracle is over. You have to wait until the drowning is done. Then you can sing. And Bnei Yisrael did exactly that. First, it says, "Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim meis al sfasiyam." They saw them dead on the banks of the river. Oz Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael. That's when they got up to sing Shira. And that's what we learned from over here. You don't sing Shira until everything is completely finished. Miamloi says that the name of the Malach Mitzrayim is Mitzrayim. Now, you should know, by the way, there are two other examples of what they say is the name of the Malach Mitzrayim, Uzzah and Rahav. Uzzah and Rahab. But this opinion of the Miamlois is that the Malach of Mitzrayim is Mitzrayim. So what they actually saw was a vision of the Malach of the Egyptians dead on the banks of the sea. That's why it says it in singular. By Yar Yisrael's Mitzrayim, the Malach, mace, dead, al Sfasiyam. Now, obviously this is impossible to see physically. You can't see a Malach. It must have been a special vision that was given to them right at that time that convinced them that it was all over, and that was the idea of what they saw. But it was 100% it was a spiritual idea. Rav Wolfson explains a little bit. A malach represents the power of the nation, the chius of that nation. When the malach is batal, then the power of the nation, everything in it is completely gone. That convinced Bnei Yisrael they were no longer slaves to this nation. They didn't have to worry about it because everything good of the nation, represented by the malach, is now gone. That's what it means that they saw the malach dead. That's how Rav Wolfson explains it. This is not the first time that they had seen this malach. In Pasuk Yud earlier, Medrash Rabbah, Perkhof Aleph Halacha Hey, says that they looked and they saw Hini Mitzrayim Noseya Achreim Vayiru Ma'od. They saw Egyptians traveling after them and they were very afraid. Says the Medrash Rabbah, they saw Mitzrayim, the Malach of Egypt himself, Mitzrayim chasing after them. It scared them so much they ran to Moshe from the vision they had seen and how they knew they were about to die. And that's what they're so scared about. And Moshe convinced them this vision was there to show them not that they were going to die, but what Hashem was going to do to them, that they were entirely going to be destroyed, even the Malach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroys the Malach of a nation before he destroys the nation itself, and that's exactly what he did. He killed the Malach, and then afterward destroyed the nation itself, and that's exactly what he was seeing. The Chidah says this very clearly based on the Medrash Rabbah, right? But I think it's pretty clear in the Medrash itself. I don't think you need the Chidah for this. It's pretty clear out of the Medrash that's what it's referring to. Alshich talks about this as well, how Bnei Yisrael were given special eyes, quote-unquote, to see this Malach Rukhni die before them, is that there were levels that they gained here. It's amazing. At first, they were only able to see a lower-level Malach called a Chitzoni. I don't know if that's a word for a demon, but a lower-level Malach was that they'll see. They rose up to the level to where they could see the Shechina itself saving them, an actual Gilui Shechina that they were able to see for everyone there. And that's what it means, that a Shifcha saw the Yam, Mashalo Ra, the best Navi B'Yisrael, that there were certain things they were able to see. There are Gilui Shechina that no one else had ever seen. That's the concept. They built themselves up. Bnei Yisrael, however, the Erev Rav did not, says the Alshich. They understood something great was happening around them, like when you know, like there's a mazel around you, then you know something's happening. But they did not see what was going on. They had no clue what was going on around them. Only Bnei Yisrael had the schus to have those eyes. The Shach says the Malach Mitzrayim is Uzzah. We said that before. It was Rahav Mitzrayim or Uzzah. And Uzzah complained that the Jews were supposed to be slaves for the next 190 years. Hashem, you promised that the Jews are going to be slaves for 400 years. They've only been slaves for 200, 210. And this is from Avram Avinu saying, Bamoida. Right? So I need them for another 190 years. You're letting them out too early. So he made that complaint. Kadosh Baruch Hu asked the Malachim to answer. The Malachim refused to answer. So Hashem answered himself. He said, I said that they're going to be slaves in a land that's not theirs. They're going to be Gerim in a land that's not theirs. I never said it's going to be Mitzrayim. It could be in other lands as well. And therefore, although they spent 210 years by you, they spent 190 years in other places before that point, and therefore that's the 400 years. The Malach of Mitzrayim didn't literally die, says the Shach. That's not what happened. It had a purpose, even after the land was destroyed, to rebuild the nation and help them along whatever, and I guess the Egyptian legacy and everything that's there, even though they're a different people, they were an African nation, and now they're an Arab nation. But nonetheless, right, its rulership was taken away. Their claims of kingship forever is gone. It's as if the Malach of Mitzrayim is dead because he no longer has that purpose, that idea. And that's what it means that Mitzrayim mace. The complaint didn't go through. He didn't get the Jews, and therefore he was gone forever. That's the concept behind it. Targum Yerushalmi says Yaakov Avinu himself woke up from his death slumber to watch his children go through the Yamsuf. Notice that I didn't say death, because technically Yaakov Avinu lo meis, and that's Gemara and Tainus and Daf Hayam Abeis. And the Gemara Tosas even proves it over there from them, what happened by Esav, right? But he technically never died. He woke up and watched his children go through the Yamsuf. And that's what it means by Vayar Yisrael. That Yisrael saw Mitzrayim Yisrael says Yam. That Yisrael himself, not Bnei Yisrael, Yaakov himself came up to watch them die. That's also a reference to a pasuk in Tehillim, Ayin Ches Yud Beis, where it says, Neged Avosam Osefela. He did wonders. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did wonders opposite their fathers. Now that's referring to, if anybody remembers, Ayin Ches is the Tehillim that refers to what happened by the Makos and everything that happened in Mitzrayim. This is what it refers to over here. He did these wonders and he did these miracles in front of their fathers. I'm referring to this. Now this Medrash technically is all over the place. The Yaakov was alive during Kriyas Yamsuf, and then he was able to see it. Six different places is mentioned, as well as the Zohar in two different places. Bereishis Rabbah Tzadi Beis, it brings a machlokas if it was just Yaakov Avinu that brought to life, or possibly all the Avos. Notice, the Pasuk in Tehillim said, Neged Avosam Osefela. So it's possibly, Ki Ga'o Ga'o is, Ga'o is the acronym, it's a Rosh HaTevis for Gimel Avos Ha'olam, that all three Avos came back to watch their children come through. This was done to show the Avos Kedoshim that Hashem has fulfilled His word by allowing them to leave Egypt. So therefore they were able to go through, and that's the idea behind this talking of Hashem and the Bereishis Rabbah, to show them what they had gone through. And that's what it means by Vayar Yisrael, Ki Go Ga'a. That's the idea behind it. Midrash Seichel Tov here says that it was Mitzrayim, the son of Chum, who was given Tchias HaMeisim in order to watch his children be destroyed by the Yamsuf. Bnei Yisrael saw him alive on the banks of the sea. And now here's how you read it. You say, Vayar Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael saw Mitzrayim, the actual Mitzrayim, who was already Meis, Al Sfasiyam, standing on the Sfasiyam. He was a person who was brought back to life, who was already dead, standing on the banks of the sea to watch his children go. Maybe this is in contrast with the previous Midrashim. The previous Midrashim says that the Avos HaKadoshim saw their Tchias HaMeisim in order to see how their skuyos, how their merits allowed the Jews to cross the Yamsuf and to be able to escape their enemies. Mitzrayim did not have enough merits in his lifetime to save his children. And it'd be a lesson that we should never just be thinking of ourselves, but all our future generations, try to become better and better. And that's the idea of what it means. That Mitzrayim, the son of Chum, was given to Tchias HaMeisim in order to watch it happen. The Ma'ari brings down, we see throughout the Gemara there were certain Tanaim and Amoraim, such as Rabbi Yochanan, but Metzia, Pei Gimel, Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf, that were able to look at someone and turn them into a pile of bones and dust. In fact, now I think about it, I think it's Bob Metzia Pei Dalet. But they were able to turn them into a pile of bones and dust. This is because it may be forbidden to look at the face of a Rasha, because the sight of a tzaddik can pull in the tumah of a Rasha to himself and can cause him to hurt. That's a Gemara Megillah Chav Ches. But a real tzaddik, a tzaddik gomer, has the ability to look at a Rasha and pull out from the Rasha sparks of Kedusha hidden inside that evil person, which is called the chius of that person, the life force of that person. And when he does so, Memela, the Rasha, remains without his lifeblood and he falls dead. These Jews were on such a high level, such an unbelievable high level when they left Egypt and experienced Kriyas Yamsuf, the 50th level of Kedusha, they were able to just look at the Rishayim and they would die. Thus, says the Ma'ari, Vayar Yisrael's Mitzrayim, Bnei Yisrael took a look at the Egyptians, mace, and they died. And that's the idea behind it. And maybe that's what the Gemara means when it says they came out of the sea, v'nasnu einehem lomar shira. They put their eyes and they decided they were going to say shira over here. What they saw is what their eyes did to the Egyptians. And once they saw how powerful they were, how big a tzaddikim they were, that they could do what Rabbi Yochanan did, they were able to pull out the chiyus. They said, that's amazing. And that's why Paro, by the way, said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't want you to see my face anymore. He realized what was going on, that Moshe Rabbeinu was pulling out the chiyus from him, that he had barely any lifeblood left. And he said, you can't see my face anymore. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. I'm not going to see your face until you die. If I ever see your face ever again, then I will kill you, because every bit of life force I take from you, you have very, very little left. That's a story for another time. The Chidush Yarim says the word Vayaminu is used after the word Vayar Yisrael, because even after they saw, they still had to believe that what they saw is what actually happened. I don't think that's such an easy thing to understand. Ben Ishchai Nod Yosef Chai says once they saw what happened at Kriyas Yamsuf, they were able to look back at everything that happened before. They were able to see the hand of Hashem in all of it. Even when Bisya pulled Moshe Rabbeinu out of the Yamsuf with such a miraculously long arm, a miracle that they had never really understood up until that point, they thanked Hashem for everything, from the first thing that had happened to them up until the very last point. And that's what this pasuk is saying. Vayar Yisrael First of all, and they remember Yarisol's Yara Gedola. They saw that. What's the coolest thing about that is brought up by the Malay Omer. Medrash Shmuel Parak Aleph says that Moshe was thrown into the Nile River on the 21st of Nisan, the day that would later be immortalized, obviously, is the day of Kriyas Yamsuth. And Malachim said to Hashem, the guy who's going to sing Shira, the one who's going to sing Shira on this day, years from now, is going to die in this day. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them. We say these words, Vayosha Hashem Bayomahu. On that very day that Moshe had already been saved by Hashem, that Moshe was pulled out of the Yam Suf, he saved Bnei Yisrael. That's the exact same thing that happened. And that's the Yada Gedola. The Yada Gedola is that long arm, the miraculously long arm that Bisya had when she pulled Moshe Rabbeinu out of the Yam Suf itself, which is absolutely amazing how it comes full circle, this Ben Ishkai and the Malay Omer together. And that's why it says Oz Yosher, because on that day he was under the river, he would sing his future shir on that day. I have serious doubts that the Od Yosef Chai ever knew that there was a sefer called the Malay Omer. The Malay Omer did not live anywhere near the Ben Ishkai. But if he did, there's no question that what he's referring to is this Malay Omer, and that's what he's putting together. I think that's 100% what they're putting together over here. To end, we're going to bring up down a story from the Tzor Lateva. A woman once went up to the Belzer Rebbe, the Sar Shalom, and asked him for a Yeshua that she needed pretty badly. I mean, who doesn't need a Yeshua, right? Something bad happened. She needed something. Tzadik went up to her and said to her, have faith in Hashem. He's going to give you the Yeshua that you're looking for, right? First, have faith, then you'll get your Yeshua. The woman answered him and said, Rebbe, I'm a simple woman. And in my Siddur it says, Vayosha Hashem Bayomahu. First there was Yeshua, and only then it says, Vayaminu Vashem Vamosha Avdo. They believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That means the Yeshua comes first, and then I'm required to believe. I don't believe first. The Belzer Rebbe said it was the only time that someone had defeated him in an argument. First of all, I think it's amazing the Belzer Rebbe never had a machlokas with this chavrusa and was always right every single time. That, I think, is the most unbelievable thing in the world, that he was always right about everything except for this. But second of all, I think it's an amazing, amazing call. Sometimes emuna, full emuna, only comes after we see the Yeshua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives for us. But that's an important line for us. The way the Chiddush HaRim is saying, even after you see something, you have to believe. You have to pull on your emunah and allow your emunah to be there, allow it to become stronger and stronger until you fully believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that truly took us through Kriyas Yamsuf. We'll stop with that, everybody. Have a great Yom Tov and a great rest of the week.